Hey everyone, it's Dave here. There seems to have been a minor issue with my microphone during this episode that might occasionally result in the sound of some distortion. It should be addressed moving forward, but I did want to let you know so that you weren't surprised. Thanks so much for listening.
The Attack Zone, Season 3, Episode 10. Deadpool 12-pack and Jimmy Chalmers.
Hello there, Dice fans. You have once again stepped into the Attack Zone, where we bring you the A to Z of competitive Dice Masters. This is your host, Dave, here. We're getting a little bit closer to normal episodes, because I'm not alone at the very beginning, as I am when I'm introducing guests. In fact, joining me here once again is the Great Salt Lake Monster, Mike.
Hey, good to be here, Dave.
How are things going out your way?
Oh, I'm super excited. Got a WKO coming up this Sunday. Batman comes out Wednesday. It's a good week.
It really is. Batman's going to be a ton of fun. And I know that, oh boy, I mean, we want to dig into that set like as soon as we can and it's out and people are doing things. But where's the time to do it? Because we also have, like you said, the WizKids opens, and some of them will be drafting Batman. Some of them will still be on Deadpool. We have Origins just after that with Nationals and Worlds and everything else. I mean, there's so much going on and so much to talk about that it almost feels like the set release. Like, where do you even find the time?
I don't know. All I know is every night this last week, I've just been playing with index cards of the Batman set and pulling dice with similar stats based on spoilers we've seen online. So I'm just ready for the real thing, so I don't have to play with my 3x5 cards anymore.
I'll tell you what, when they first spoiled some of the super rares and so forth for Age of Ultron, we were pretty excited about some of the things that could be done with Jocasta. Unfortunately, a lot of them never materialized in the competitive game, much to, I think, Randy's chagrin especially. But still, she was like, I proxied her immediately, and I believe it was Joker who was basically the exact same die as her, almost precisely. So I've been there. I've been there for sure, Mike.
Oh man, just talking about Jocasta makes me sad that I can't play with her anymore in Modern.
Yeah, but you know, all of the crazy tools that we're gonna keep getting. I mean, eventually in Golden. And it does look like there are going to be some Golden Age events at Gen Con. If I heard correctly, assuming things can be trusted that we hear. But it does appear there will be some support for Golden Age coming down the pipeline. I would hope that with all the tools that we'll continue to get, that Jocasta team will really, really pop up. That is the one drawback to rotation, and I think this is in any game with this. There are always those cards that felt like they were just, you know, a couple of pieces away, a couple of tools away, and they're gone from the, we'll say the major tournament format before you really had the chance to make that happen.
Yeah, it's enough to make you cry. I know when I've been playtesting the last few weeks, there's a couple of staples that I just really missed. I'm not even talking about Bard. I mean, good riddance, but things like Blue Eyes or things like, you know, Nova or things, those kind of staple cards that weren't necessarily everywhere, but I enjoyed them and now I miss them.
It's true, and you start to look at some of the analogs, right? I think we've discussed how maybe the Stepford Cuckoos could be used to pull something out of play or pull something back into your prep area in the way that you would rely on for Blue Eyes. Of course, you won't get KO triggers from that, but we've talked about that, and then there's the question of like, well, is it worth buying the die and having to go through what you need to do to get it out there to make the play happen? And then you know, you have less control over it, right? It's not just on demand. And is that worth it? So you look at the analogs and compare and do some cost-benefit analysis, I guess. And at the end of the day, it's almost like you're writing a book on business, not on Dice Masters.
That's true.
Yep. Well, Dice Masters is, of course, the topic here. And we are going to go through, because we have access to Deadpool right now, and some folks, I know in Chicago, for example, are drafting Deadpool for this WizKids Open, we're going to do a 12-pack. We'll consider both hands as if they were the two that we were looking at, trying to figure out our first picks and what might synergize, what might wheel, and how we're going to approach a more competitive draft like that. But first, we have to... I delayed last week because I was not prepared for our May? No, this is May. Our April Patreon winner. So if you want the details, you can check them out at patreon.com/theattackzone. But basically, the six-pack is supported by you listeners, which is fantastic. Every month, we give away the foils and rares and super rares that we pull, and we have pulled some of those super rares. We have given away super rare cards to one of our Patreon backers. So we really greatly appreciate your support. I'll tell you what, every month when we go to keep up on these things and look at these things, it's really humbling to me. And we really appreciate it. And we're hoping to be able to add some extra things to the Patreon rewards bucket down the road. And we can tell you more about that after we get through Origins. And some of you will be surprised with some things there. Also, we didn't have a ton of foils or rares this last month, so I supplemented that with some foils and so forth that I had around here, because I want to make sure that there is a bit of value for the folks who are getting these cards. So, our Patreon award winner for the month of April is... Julio Nazario. So, Julio, I'll be emailing you soon. If you hear this before I email you, get in touch with me. This is a really busy time for me right now, as you've probably surmised from the last several episodes. So, I'll get to you as fast as I can, I promise. But they are there, and we'll get things out to you. So, congratulations, Julio, and thank you and the rest of you patrons for your support. Okay. We have some house cleaning out of the way, Mike. What say you we get to Deadpool?
All right, let's do it. I know there's awesome. A couple of WKOs coming up this Sunday that are still doing Deadpool, not Batman. So hopefully we get a couple good ones to talk about.
I hope so, too. All right, so the only thing that we're missing here is being able to, as Shadow Meld might say, read the rainbow. We have the rest of the tools here because we are considering both hands. So we're going to go through the first six packs, get an impression, things that we like, things that we don't like, and then we're going to look and see what changes in the second six, and then we'll kind of get our top two from there and what we think could synergize with each other, or maybe it's just going to be the best available. Either way, let's give it a look. We have a Deadpool six-pack. Okay, so we start off with our first foil, in fact. Miguel O'Hara, Spider-Man 2099, the four-fist Spider-Man family character. When he KOs a character die with combat damage, send the KO'd character die to its owner's bag.
Miguel's okay. He's got decent stats for a four cost. I mean, he's going to be a beat stick, and it's a little nice that if they block with a sidekick, he'll go to the bag. He's definitely not a first pick, though.
He isn't. It's a good tool, and I think... I don't know about you, but I think, in general, I find all of the cards that send things to bags instead of prep area especially, to be pretty interesting and very, very useful, but not first pick material.
I would agree with you when Constantine was still around. It's lost a lot of luster to me since Constantine's out of the game.
Fair enough. Let's look then next at Mr. Sinister, Apocalyptic Transformation, a five-mask villain. He has back for more. You may reroll any number of dice in your field zone. Now, I should point out that the benefit of something like Miguel O'Hara, specifically in this format, is leaving out some of those back for more abilities. But, I mean, it's fair to say that a lot of the back for more stuff hasn't been that impactful, and I don't know that this one is either. What say you?
If this was outside a draft, I could see how it would work for some good combos, but in draft, I don't think there's hardly anything in Deadpool that would benefit from this. And for a five cost, in a draft, you're starting to need something that will really affect or help your team. So I definitely would pass on this guy.
No, and you know, the other thing is, for a five cost, I want slightly more consistent stats for the price you're paying, not only to buy it, but to field it. His total fielding cost is 5, but his stats just go 3-2-4-3-6-3. Now, I like the level 3 face, but if it was maybe like 4-2-5-2-6-3 or something like that, I could live with it, at least as a body. But as it is, not so great all around. Sandy Brandenburg, secretary and receptionist, is a 2-shield ally. She's a sidekick, and that's pretty much it.
Well, it's nice to have 2 costs when you're doing a draft to get a body on the field. Unfortunately, her stats are almost a sidekick. They're really bad. I mean, her highest face, you're paying an energy to get a 2-2, and there's just not a lot of ally synergy in this set, so... I mean, if you're needing a 2-cost just so you can buy something, then grab her. Or if you got a better win condition with a shield, then grab her. But yeah, she's pretty sad.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I think her best use is in not a limited format, is outside of limited, in something that's trying to use a bunch of like sidekick cheese kind of stuff. In the format, I mean, if you look it up on Retrobox, there's only 12 cards that reference the word sidekick, and a couple of those are allies, and most of them don't really help. So moving forward, Negasonic Teenage Warhead Foresight is a 3-bolt X-Men character. While active, we were talking about this one in the pre-show. While active, when your opponent targets one of your character dice with a global ability, spin each of your Negasonic Teenage Warhead character dice in the field zone to level 3. And that level 3 face is, of course, a 6-3.
So, I have a love-hate relationship with this card. Sometimes I want the other Negasonic Teenage Warheads. That being said, it's a 3-cost. The level 3 side's amazing. And if you have maybe some action dice that have a good global on them, that you can tempt your opponent with, she'd be good. I like her. I like some of her other her uncommon and rare a little better, but she's good. I mean, it prevents your opponent from doing any globals.
Yeah, I mean, immediately it has immediately it establishes a crazy board presence, and there are some reasonable character targeting globals right in this set that you might see. I mean, we all obviously there's the stuff that are just kind of evergreen, like the unstable canister / magic missile, or the a motorcycle in set, for example, is something that your characters might get targeted with. So, you know, if there's something like that available or out there, or especially if people who are coming to your event are very fond of things like magic missile and stuff like that. Might not be a bad idea, not as a first pick, but might not be a bad idea to have a couple of these, especially as inexpensive as they are.
Yeah, she's only a 3-cost. Her total fielding cost is 2. Considering she has a body presence of 6, and if they bring distraction, which a lot of people in my area do, then they distract one of these back, and all of your characters are now 6-3s. I like it.
Yeah, it's an immediate threat, and you have to think about it. And it's not just going to be taken out by a quick ping after either once it's on level 3. So, good all around, solid card, just not first pick. Probably the best that we've seen yet, I would say, but not first pick. We hope it would be upended. Madame Hydra Viper is a 4-shield villain. When Madame Hydra damages an opponent, move target die from that opponent's prep area to their bag. I think in this set, that's more back for more tech, probably.
So her stats are pretty terrible. She's a 4-cost. Miguel had better stats. Her total fielding cost is only 2. I see her as more of a blocker type character, and there has to be something in their prep area, which is kind of hard to do in this set unless they bring some basic action that lets them do it. So yeah, she's not that great.
Yeah, she's the kind of character that the only time she's going to get through is if she's like the one more attacker than your opponent can block, and she also has the lowest attack damage of those at the time, and that's not... And then what's the benefit really doing? Your opponent has to have something in the prep area for that to even work. I don't know.
Yeah, she's all around not that great.
Okay, moving on. We have Agent Carter, the three-fist shield agent behind enemy lines. When Agent Carter is active, when a sidekick character die is KO'd, place it in its owner's bag. So some more of that nonsense there. Not nonsense, it's fun.
Yeah, she's better. She's better than the version we saw earlier.
Oh, yes.
Because now any sidekick... I mean, it's bad that it affects your sidekicks, too. But this is a decent card to have, especially since your opponent's probably going to have a wall. If you have another way that you're going to attack with fast characters or something, or your opponent's going to want to block with sidekicks, I think she's a decent pick.
Yeah, I think so too. And it's one of those things, if you take it, just understand how to play with it and around it. It does take away the strategy of knocking out your own sidekicks. So it could limit some of the shocking grasp ramp if that's something that you like to do, for example. But at the same time, then you shocking grasp your opponent's sidekick, it goes to the bag instead of to prep, so they don't get that energy, and you still get your shocking grasp back. So it makes it a little bit less effective, but still enough that you can have a leg up on your opponent. So still can be worthwhile. There's the part of it where it's like anti-tempo for you, but then there's a benefit if you are using it in a certain way. You just got to be careful and remember, sidekicks work different now. Deadpool, my set, my rules, five-fist Deadpool family character has Deadly. And that's Deadpool.
There's a couple other people with Deadly in the set. I usually find myself grabbing Deadpool if I get something like Black Bolt or something and I don't have Madame Medusa or anything like that. He's a decent card. Deadly is what makes him decent. He's a threat. Your opponent won't attack you willy-nilly because they might lose their big attacker if they do. In almost any of the other Deadly characters, I pick over Deadpool because they're all pretty much cheaper than him, but he's still good.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, Lady Deadpool. There we go. Right in order here. Deadpool, Lady Deadpool, and then Kidpool.
Nice.
You can't make that stuff up. Lady Deadpool, regenerative healing factor thingy. Six shield Deadpool family character. If you have more different active Deadpool characters than an opponent, Lady Deadpool costs three less to purchase. There's a lot of that Deadpool family synergy in this set. I don't think I've seen a team yet that's truly been able to take advantage of that. How about you?
Well, the only way I've seen this work, and I've done it myself, is I had Agent Bob, the one who was a active Deadpool character, and I bought him turn one, filled in turn three, and then I could just keep buying these for three costs. Now, as a three cost, Lady Deadpool's great. Her stats are good. Her total fielding cost is only three. She's a decent card at a three cost. As a six cost, she's a terrible card. So if you have a way to make sure you have more active Deadpool characters, which should be pretty easy to do, then she's good.
There you go. So then Kidpool, no detention for me, four shield Deadpool family character. Back for more. Draw a die. If it is a Deadpool family character die, roll it. Otherwise, return it to your bag.
It's just so hard to do back for more. I mean, if I could consistently do this every turn and my whole deck is Deadpool, it's decent. In a draft, you might get this off once, maybe, in the entire draft.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it has to be... How many times is a given character die in your prep during a draft? Like, a specific one. You know, it's not that often. It happens, but it's not that often the same one over and over and over again. And I think that's the problem with Back for More.
Yeah. I mean, for a 4 cost, his stats aren't great. And, I mean, this ability doesn't help. It's a pretty weak ability.
Yeah, unfortunately so. Right. Ooh, this one might be a good choice here. Hitmonkey. He's a hitman who's a monkey. 4-fist character. When blocked, you may pay fist to assign Hitmonkey's combat damage to the defending player this turn as if it were not blocked.
Well, this is the Holy Grail right here. Yep. If you see uncommon Hitmonkey and you take it and you pray no one else pulled an uncommon Hitmonkey, and then you won the whole draft. So.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very good card, and if you build, I mean, you don't have to do a lot to build your team around it, but if you build your team around it, you're going to do very well. Now, if you just take the card, it will do work on its own, but you want to support it, obviously. But this is a build around card, 100%.
Yep, this is a win condition on its own.
Yeah. I can't think of anything that we could see in the last couple of cards here that would change me from that, barring like a super rare. Like Truby recently had some success with Lady Deadpool, but I think Hitmonkey is the pick. Let's see. Well, Mr. Sinister Gene Splicer, the 6-mask Hydra or villain. While Mr. Sinister is active, opposing players may not reroll dice during the roll and reroll steps unless they pay 1 life. I like the ability. If it was like a 5 cost, maybe it would be a lot more interesting to me.
On a control team, if this was like a 3 or a 4 cost card and his stats sucked, I would pull this guy. Like, in the current modern scene, if this ability was on a 3 or a 4 cost character, I'd play it in every deck. I think this is an amazing ability. If I could. I wouldn't even care if the stats on the guy sucked. But yep. As a 6 cost, yeah, it's not going to win me the game.
No, it's just in a draft especially, it's going to take you too long to get to it. I mean, we're obviously diminished somewhat in our ramp abilities in Modern compared to where we were in Unlimited as we sunset that format here really in just like about a week and a couple of days. Nonetheless... we still have a lot more tools, and even there, it's too expensive. Finally, Lockjaw, transport the Royals, the 3-shield inhuman. When Lockjaw is blocked, you may pay 1. If you do, remove Lockjaw from the attack zone. That's certainly not better than Hitmonkey.
Yeah, I've only seen these abilities work okay on a few cards. Songbird comes to mind. She had a similar ability. It just never seems very effective to me. I mean, you attack, they block your guy, and you make your guy not do damage, just come back. What did you save yourself? A blocker, I guess, for next turn? You made them waste a blocker to block Lockjaw? I'm not seeing why I would want to pay energy to do this very often.
No, I mean, I get it when it's like, if it's blocking and you could remove it, that would be a little bit more worth, because then... you've maintained a body in the field while still nullifying whatever damage, especially if it's like against an Overcrusher. But when attacking, I don't really see a whole lot of benefit for this one in particular.
Literally, the only reason I could see it being useful is you attacked with it so that you could get 1 character through. You got 1 character through to do damage, and you wanted to leave Lockjaw in the field to block next turn anyway, but... how often is that critical to get that 1 guy through and still have a guy come back to be a blocker? I don't know. Usually I just didn't attack.
Yeah. No, I have honestly no clue. So Hitmonkey is the pick here. So let's say, okay, scenario. We have looked through. We've opened our first 6 packs. We look through. We see, ooh, Hitmonkey. Hands down, exactly what I'm looking for. Exactly the kind of card I need to see in one of my stacks here. The way that you look through the second pack now changes quite a bit, right?
Yes. Now that you know that you're drawing that Hitmonkey, is there anything that will support him?
Or maybe another Hitmonkey, or, what else? So as I'm looking through here, ooh, a couple of rares. That's fun and such. As I'm looking through here, I'm not 100% sure, but we are certainly going to find out. The first thing here that we have is Wolverine. I've never actually had to say this one because I've never really used the common. Snicked. Sure. Six shield X-Man. When Wolverine takes damage, you may pay one generic energy to move a Deadpool die from your used pile to your prep area. There's the Kidpool synergy that we were missing, right? Yeah. Too bad it's on a six cost.
Yeah, this is... Yeah, again, if this was a three or a four cost, maybe that'd be great. Ability on a six cost? Yeah, I'll never use it.
No. You know, I just want to point out, I mean, we talk about some of the Back for More synergy that is or isn't. There are 11 cards that have it, five of them at common. And only one of them does damage. It only deals one damage. It's on a six cost. Two of them do damage. Miguel O'Hara also does on the rare. Back for More, deal one damage to target opponent. And at least that's a four cost. But on the whole, there's not a ton here. You know, there's some Deadpool synergy on the Back for Mores on the uncommon cycle of Deadpool characters. But on the whole, there's not a ton here that really makes you want to make that ability fire.
Yeah, some of these abilities, I mean, it's obviously they want you to do it in a draft, but they just did not put it on the right cards if that's what they were going for.
Well, I wouldn't just say that. I would say the abilities weren't impactful enough.
That's true, but too.
It's something like Heroic was pretty interesting way back in Uncanny X-Men, but the problem is that what it did wasn't game impacting enough for the cost to be worth it. And I think the same is true here, especially with, like, I don't know, I mean, there's a couple of three cost ones, but everything else is four or higher. It was like three costs. Everything else is four or higher. I don't know.
I've got every Back for More pulled up on my screen at the moment. I'm trying to see if there's anything I would really want. The only thing that looks somewhat useful is the Miguel O'Hara's.
Yep.
Deal one damage to target opponent in the Back for More. That one seems useful.
The fact that the character is useful too. Like, a lot of these Back for Mores have nothing else. But that Miguel O'Hara rare also has fast, which is a good thing, especially because his attack stats go 4-5-5, give him Overcrush, whatever else. Fast is good. But that's like the only one, I agree. And you know the other thing? A lot of these things have fielding costs that aren't that favorable. Even some that have a zero fielding cost on level one go 0-1-2. So as something with where the primary focus of the card is the ability to get back into prep and then do something, I don't know. The one thing they did get right, I would say, on all except for probably Evil Deadpool, is that none of them have an extremely high defense. So you, well, okay, never mind. Agent X and Colossus are a problem that way too. Okay, so one of the things they got sort of right, most of them don't have an extremely high defense, so they're not going to just like stick in your field and you'll never get to use this ability again. You block with it, you knock it out, you try and trigger Back for More again. But only one of them is worth the trouble.
Yeah. I mean, this just feels like another ability that it could have been amazing. I mean, now it's in the bucket, like Heroic, like Aftershock.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, whoever drafts around Aftershock, if it gets knocked out, that would have been an amazing ability. Oh, my opponent has to knock it out? Well, this ability sucks.
Yeah. Yeah, that's absolutely true. And what we can hope for is that we see this developed in future sets. We have seen that. Team Watch wasn't just an Age of Ultron thing. That came back around. I'd love to see more Back for More and see them develop this. And, of course, we also saw Team Watch as the progression of Heroic, and kind of Heroic done better. So anyway, moving on past our first card in this one, Wolverine, we can say, does not support Hitmonkey. Neither does Outlaw in his temple, three-bolt Deadpool character. Back for more, search your bag for an outlaw die and roll it. If it rolls an energy face, field it at level 1. Otherwise, add it to your prep area. She's multiplicative. Yeah. That's interesting. But...
Well, you have to go all in on outlaw, which I'm okay with doing, but her stats are terrible. Why do I want 4 outlaws out? She's a 2-1, 2-2-2-3. I mean, for a 3 cost, she's a body. Do I want to buy one? Maybe, if I can't buy anything else. Why would I ever buy 4 of these?
So, yeah, so, why draft 4 of them? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you there. Bob, Agent of Hydra, hiding behind you. When Bob, Agent of Hydra, is active, Deadpool family character dice get +1 attack. Oh, and he is a 3-fist Deadpool family character himself, as you referenced earlier.
Yeah, Bob's great. I like Bob. Mm-hmm.
Everyone loves Bob.
Yeah, everyone loves Bob. In a Deadpool, this is a great card. If you have Hitmonkey, maybe a couple other Deadpool cards, I could see him being a pick from this deck.
Mm-hmm. I mean, certainly there are no shortage of Deadpool family cards in here. And maybe you go all in on, like, okay, let's go silly here. You go all in on the outlaw and now you have Bob. So now at least the outlaw is 3 attack on all phases. Probably doesn't make her that much better, but at least you're getting some kind of mileage. I do tend to like things that basically allow you to get a bunch of inexpensive things and then pump them up a little bit and make them a little bit more viable as an offensive threat.
Well, even his ability here, he's a 3 cost because he's a Deadpool character. His stats really are 3-1, 3-2, 4-2.
Agreed.
Yeah, so I'd rather buy, you know, 4 of these than 4 Outlaw.
Also true. Agent X. Nihu Miyanda. Agent X. 5-fist. Back for more. You may pay 1 life to draw a die and roll it. That may be... I'm not sure, maybe actually the least compelling back for more ability in the set. Unless you have like 1 die in your bag and it's the one that you need to win the game. I don't want to do it.
Well, in a draft, it's especially painful to use this ability because you will be chinked to death. It's very rare that you get hit all for 20 unless some... miracle happens. Mostly you'll get hit for 2 or 3 or 4 damage until eventually you die. And this card makes you damage yourself. Now, I like this ability. You might not like this ability, but I think this ability is great in not draft. I could work with this ability.
Yeah, I'm all for that. But in draft,
I
mean, to your point, I mean, we talk about the importance of direct damage cards in draft. When you do this, you're doing your opponent's work for them. There are times to do it, but I don't know that the time to do it is when you've gotten a 5-cost character and you're rolling it from your prep area, you're likely rather later on in the game. Now, on the one hand, that could be the time for a risk-reward play, but on the other hand, that could be a huge difference between you winning and you not, that one life. And so there are times when it could be wonderful, but there are also times when it could just be the nail in the coffin, or you can't use it. So now you have a 5 cost with pretty good attack stats, admittedly, but an ability that you just can't use a lot of the time because it's impractical.
Exactly.
Okay, then. Hey, here's one I like. I don't know about you. Blind Al, stay in the Dead Hut. 3 mask. When Blind Al is dealt combat damage, deal 1 damage to target opponent.
Yeah, it's an amazing card.
It really is.
By threaten with it, if they block, you dealt a damage. If they didn't block, you dealt damage. So she just, you get her out. Whether you use her as a blocker, fine. Whether you just keep attacking with her, just as good.
Mm-hmm. She is really, really quite good.
The Hitmonkey and Blind Owl together, that's a scary deck.
Yeah. I would say right now that is, I mean, not that we've had a ton of all-stars here so far, that's my pick to go with Hitmonkey.
Yeah, so you get Hitmonkey to do your attacking damage. You get a bunch of Blind Owl die out just to block and keep doing the ping, and Hitmonkey will do the slightly higher damage. You'll win between those two cards, I'm pretty
sure. Pair it with a basic action like Anger Issues for Hitmonkey that can pump them up with both the global and the action die effect. And you can get more damage through faster. I think it's roses all around. But let's see, Mr. Sinister Apocalyptic Transformation with Back for More. We already covered this one, so we'll just skip it. Dogpool Earth 20,110. Deadpool family character for four fists. When fielded, deal one damage to target opposing character die. On the burst phase, which is level two, also spin target Deadpool character up one level. You know, if we were playing Sealed and our goal was to put together a Deadpool family team, we could probably do it from these cards that we've read so far.
I think we've got almost the whole family.
I think so. Kid, lady, dog, Deadpool himself. We got Bob in here. We got, we're doing pretty well.
Well, this Dogpool has an okay ability. You get rid of a sidekick. It's not terrible. I'm not in love with it. 4/4 cost, his stats are okay. His total fielding cost is only 3. I mean, he's a 4/2 on his lowest side. That's decent.
Mm-hmm.
If you have something like that, Bob, that gives all your Deadpool characters plus 1 attack, I'd go for him for sure.
I would go for this if I'm using Bob, and then I'd also look at Agent Carter to have with this. Just some more sidekick hate. And what you do with these really is you get rid of the chump blockers when you have abilities that allow you to do that. And not only that, you get rid of them and your opponent can't roll them again the next turn. So you got Dogpool, you got your Shocking Grasp, you got Blind Owl making things attack a little harder, you got Agent Carter doing things. Like, you actually have what could be a decent combat-oriented team. My only problem with it personally is that it takes a few things happening together to get online, and sometimes it's hard to set that up with consistency in draft.
That's true.
Black Tom Cassidy, trusty Shalala, 5-bolt villain, has fast, which is pretty great. Black Tom Cassidy gets +1/+1 for each different opposing X-Men character die.
Well, that's not going to happen. So, he's fast. He's fast and he's got decent stats. I'd take Miguel O'Hara, though, any day over him.
Mm-hmm.
There's a time in Avengers vs. X-Men and Uncanny X-Men where X-Men characters were all over the place. Today, you see hardly any of them. And in this set, there's only two, right?
No, that's not true. You know, a while ago I was looking at this card and I thought the same thing as you. But it turns out, no. We have Colossus, Phantom X, Multiple Man, Negasonic Teenage Warhead, Scarlet Witch, Stepford Cuckoo, Storm, Wolverine, and... that's it. All of those.
Well, that's a lot more than I thought off the top of my head. Maybe it's just because I don't play with any of those.
Five of them are... maybe six of them are relatively inexpensive. Up and down the line as well. So all there's right, that.
Okay, well then he's definitely better in draft than I originally thought.
I'm still not taking him.
Yeah. Besides Multiple Man, there's not many of those that are probably first picks for anybody.
Phantom X. Maybe
you take Phantom X?
Phantom X Uncommon. Non-villain character dice cannot block Phantom X unless the defending player moves one die from their prep area to their bag. For each Phantom X character die they declare blockers for. Yeah, I would say that after Hitmonkey, he's the next Uncommon that I would look for as a win condition. Hitmonkey's tops, but he's next.
He is pretty good. I just keep thinking the Wolverine and the other ones that are really so high cost.
Yeah. Oh, a lot of them are. I mean, it's the X-Men that are in here aren't that great. I still see people trying to make Stepford Cuckoo's work. I think there is some merit there, that there's not a lot of benefit to some of the cycling in this set, as we would do in Unlimited or Modern or wherever else. So I don't know that their best place is here. The Rare Storm, I mean, not that we're banking on a rare in a draft, but the Rare Storm is excellent. While active, when you use an action die, deal one damage to target opponent or target character die. I mean, there are some great individual cards in this set. It's just that some of the draft synergies can be a bit more challenging to put together. But there are some great individual cards, and the X-Men did get a few. But how often are we going to see that rare storm in a draft?
Well, now that I have to eat turd because I forgot how many X-Men were in the Deadpool set.
Yeah, take that, Mike.
I'd still take Miguel over this guy.
Yeah, me too. All right. We're still taking Blind Owl Hitmonkey anyway. Moving forward, Taskmaster, watch and learn the 5-mask character. When he attacks, you may use the When Attacks ability of target character die as if Taskmaster had that ability. I like it in theory.
But yes,
in theory, that is kind of the problem. Like, when we're talking about some of these abilities, like Hitmonkey, that's great. Oh, it's when blocked, you know? Phantom X is an attack-oriented ability, but it's not when attacks. I'd have to look here on Retrobox to see. I don't know how many great when attacks abilities there are in this set.
So, here's my problem with it. It costs 5 to get this character out, to buy this character, and his total fielding cost is a little bit higher as well.
I'm sorry, I'm laughing while you're talking. It looks to me, if I'm doing this right, that there is two when attacks abilities in this entire set. One on uncommon, one on rare, and one of them is conditional to be underdog.
Okay, so...
Well,
even in the wide world, let's take this out of draft, because obviously you're not picking this guy for draft. Even in the entire golden, every card available,
yeah,
almost every instant, I would just buy the guy that has the when attacking ability a second time versus this guy. I mean, for a 5 cost to buy, and then what's his total fielding cost?
Let's see here. Oh, 4.
So total fielding cost of 4, 5 cost. This guy took up another slot on my team. I just stick an extra die on whatever guy has this ability. Yeah.
Now, it's possible I didn't do the search as well as I could, but I'm pretty sure I did.
Well, I know you missed one already, because I'm looking at... When Colossus attacks, any character dice that would be assigned to block first takes 2 damage. So,
oh, you know why? I can tell you why, because I accidentally still have the X-Men affiliation filter on when I was doing that. So, mea culpa. There are 12 of them. 2 on super rares, 1 conditional, 3 on rares. One of them is Taskmaster. One of them requires many MODOKs. I mean, Angela is super conditional. Lockjaw that we already said. Yeah, it's just like, eh.
I don't know. Maybe I'd use it with Captain Marvel. That 7 cost, it lets you do a second attack phase.
Sure.
Because he's only 5 cost. I took up 2 slots for that ability, though, so I better win with it.
You better. All right, let's move forward after laughing at Taskmaster a little bit. You know, I like those abilities, and it makes me think of... I don't know. Was it Warth, I think, that could copy things?
Yeah.
And it's kind of a similar way, but I think in a better way, too, if I recall. And yet, he never quite worked either. I think it's a good space... Oh, yeah, it's the same thing, but with when fielded abilities, which I think when fielded abilities in the game have generally been a little bit stronger, notwithstanding things like Gabi, which have just been bonkers.
So the reason why Warth was okay is because he could synergize with people you didn't want to leave the field.
Mm-hmm.
Something like Deadman, where you would capture a die whenever he was fielded. Well, because Warth came out, you could capture a second character, and since Deadman didn't leave play, Deadman now has captured 2 people.
Right.
And that kind of stuff, because normally you'd have to let those people go. So Warth was great for those types of things. He could do something unique I'm not seeing that uniqueness here in Taskmaster.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Lady Deadpool, an uncommon here. Stab with the pointy end. Good advice. 5 shield Deadpool family character. When active, when you field a Deadpool character die other than Lady Deadpool, you may pay Bolt. If you do, spin that character die to level 3.
I like her. If I'm in a Deadpool set and I see this, and I'm like, I'm doing Deadpool only affiliation, I grab her. She makes every single one of my characters a level 3. Yeah, let's do this.
Yeah, the only caveat I'd say there is that none of the Deadpool family characters really go off at level 3. The most they hit attack-wise is 5. And a lot of them are fairly squishy. There's only one of them that has... Well, and they're in the super rares. I think only Deadpool and Lady Deadpool themselves actually... like have more than 4 defense at that level either, and a lot of them are like 3-2 or 5-2 at level 5. So I would say that's the one caveat, but again, if I like cards that can give +1 to everything, then I like a card that can basically like everything from level 1 to level 3, almost every Deadpool thing gets something more. So essentially it's a plus whatever attack and defense for all your stuff.
Yeah, like I said, if I was playing Deadpool, I'd grab her. But if it wasn't a Deadpool family only, I'd ignore her.
Yeah, and I'm going to as well. We have 2 rares here. Blind Owl fought alongside Captain America. 4 mask. If you have taken 4 or more combat damage in a turn, you may immediately purchase 1 Blind Owl die for 3 generic energy less.
It's so sad that the rare is so... much worse than the common.
Yep. But it's a rare, and people like those. People filling out collections, etc., etc. Can't go wrong there. I can't add anything to that. Finally,
If you took 4 combat damage, wouldn't you want something to come save you? It's not going to be Blind Owl.
No, not at all.
And who is saving a mass energy for the following turn to buy her?
I can buy Blind Owl now. Yeah.
They're going to attack me.
This is what it's all been building up towards.
And you only can buy 1. If you could buy all of them, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. It's like that is the secret plan of nobody. Finally, we end here with Colossus armored up, the 7-fist X-Men character. When he attacks any character dice that would be assigned to block, first take 2 damage.
That's amazing.
It's a good ability.
It's a good ability on a 7 cost. I'll never get to play it in draft.
No, probably not. And the 2 damage, it's like almost there. The 2 damage is not quite enough to win the game. I think maybe if you were thinking in a limited perspective... or Golden Age, rather, Modern Age, we'll say Modern, and you're going to put him out there, and maybe you have like a dragon with some breath weapon and pair that up, that should win you the game right there, 1 swing, in a similar manner as Hulk Smash, though I will say also that teams that win in other ways are probably a lot faster than you'll be able to get this online. In set, we're kind of similar. You don't have a lot of those blanket damage abilities other than the other Colossus, which is a back for more. It's a card that could be a win condition in the right circumstances, but your opponent will probably have enough things that stick on the board that survive the 2 damage swing, the poor man's Hulk Smash, that it won't matter a whole lot. It's like just short of being impactful as it is, but it could be fun moving forward in Modern Age.
Yeah, you'll take out all their sidekicks.
Mm-hmm. And other jumps. A lot of things that just have 2, but yeah. So we look and we have Blind Owl, and Hitmonkey is the last card standing here. I can never be sorry about a draft where I get to take both of those in this format.
You know, you might be winning your WKO3 with those 2 cards.
You absolutely could. Put the right basic actions around it, craft a good supporting cast of characters that can lock and have some interesting abilities. you know, that Agent Carter isn't bad just because of how disruptive it can be. Anything like that. There are a lot of options, and I think that I think that with those two as your marquee cards, you stand a good chance, even if you only have like a die or two for each. So that's a whole lot of Deadpool.
Yes, it is. let's drop it now and talk about Batman, right? Right?
Yeah. Oh, please. Oh, please. We finally have a new set. I can't wait to dig in and talk about something that's it's not Green Arrow Flash and not Deadpool. I mean, Green Arrow Flash is great. Deadpool has a lot of fun characters and fun cards. But, man, I'm ready. My body is ready for new...
And based on the spoilers we've seen, it's a very exciting set. It's a game-changing set. There's not like one card that's like, oh, that card's going to change the game. There's at least a dozen cards that could change the game in this set.
The amount of things that we see that look even just that are at least playable, I think it is on par with what we've seen in. Well, I would say Green Arrow Flash is similar in that way. Had a lot of game-changing type of cards, had a lot, but even in general, just had a high quantity of playable cards, which is also great because that's a set that you can point to your players and say, get some from that, to your new players who you're trying to get in the fold. Get some from that. Oh, you like Batman? Of course you do. Everybody loves Batman. Get some from that. Oh, you're watching Arrow? Oh, you're watching Flash? Get some from that set because... it's going to be hard to be too disappointed because you'll have fun abilities and interactions. Even if you just buy a handful of packs, you can really feel like you have something to get you on your way.
Yeah. And if there's any set that could take down Ultraman and Mask Green's reign at the moment, it's going to be the Batman set.
We certainly hope so. It's entirely possible. Well, the big thing that Mask Ring has going for it is that Raven, but that flip Batman with the non-targeted stuff.
Oh, yeah.
That alone. I mean, we've been talking about that.
That's going in my deck against those Ring teams, that's for sure.
Yep.
It's not going to save me against Ultraman, but it'll save me against Mask Ring.
Right. It's a start. It's a start. All right. Well, Mike, let's wrap it up. Thank you so much for listening. We know that you can spend your time in many ways, and we are truly thankful that you spend it with us. If you like what we're doing, please leave a review on iTunes. It helps us get the word out. The Attack Zone is a production of the Reserve Pool Network. Theme music courtesy of Nine Inch Nails, shared via Creative Commons at remix.nin.com. Promotional consideration has been given in the form of review product. Don't forget to check out our other podcasts, The Reserve Pool every Thursday, and The Prep Area running opposite Tuesdays from us. We'll be back in 2 weeks, and until then, keep rolling.